there. Nirvana, being pierced. Gatranam, whose bodies. Titravajahi, with variegated feathers. Shili Mukai, by the arrows. Viplavaha, destruction. Abut was done. Dukitanam, of the most aggrieved. Aggrieved means unhappy. Adusaha, unbearable. Koruna Atmanam, for persons who are very merciful. So translation, when King Paranjana was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. When demoniac persons engage in animal killing, the demigods or devotees of the Lord are very much afflicted by this killing. Demoniac civilizations in this modern age maintain various types of slaughterhouses all over the world. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals and at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. All these affairs are ghastly. And a compassionate person, namely a devotee of the Lord, becomes very unhappy to see such a sight. The hunting process is also carried on in a different way, as we have already explained. Hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicated, killing animals, and enjoying sex all serve as the basis of modern civilization. Vaishnavas are unhappy to see such a situation in the world, and therefore they are very busy spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees are pained to see the hunting and killing of animals in the forest, the wholesale slaughter of animals in the slaughterhouses, and the exploitation of young girls in brothels that function under different names as clubs and societies. The great sage Narada began his instructions to King Pratinibhari Shah. In these instructions, Narada Muni explained that devotees like him are very much afflicted by all the killing that goes on in human society. Not only are saintly persons afflicted by this killing, but even God himself is afflicted and therefore comes down in the incarnation of Lord Buddha. Jayadev Goswami therefore sings, Sriya Vidaya Darshita Pashu Khatam. Simply to stop the killing of animals, Lord Buddha compassionately appeared. Some rascals put forward the theory that an animal has no soul or is something like dead stone. In this way, they rationalize there is no sin in animal killing. Actually, animals are not dead stone, but the killers of animals are stone-hearted. Consequently, no reason or philosophy appeals to them. They continue keeping slaughterhouses and killing animals in the forest. The conclusion is that one who does not care for the instructions of saintly persons like Narada and his disciplic succession surely falls into the category of Nashta Pragya, and thus goes to hell. So, Tatra Nirvana Gatranam Chitra Vajay Shili Mukohai Viplavobu Dukitanam Dushaha Karunatmanam. So, Om Gnat Timuranda Shah. Gananjana shlakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So in modern society, we find to a large extent, the killing of animals, the torturing of animals, torturing of other living entities, is very much hidden from the people. I mean, for example, you can go and buy a Big Mac. I don't know if any of you know what a Big Mac is. Anyway, McDonald's, I think you have that here, McDonald's or KFC. And it's hidden, actually, where that comes from. I know in America, they have this person, this clown called Ronald McDonald. And he makes it seem like hamburgers grow on trees. They said the hamburger tree. They don't show the reality of where meat comes from. And, of course, in the supermarkets, which you also have here, I assume, they package the meat in such a way so you don't even know where it comes from. I remember when I was young, we would go to, my mother would take me to go to see a butcher. You know what a butcher is? And he'd come out, you could actually see the meat, it was very disgusting. And he would come out of his workshop and use this bandsaw. A bandsaw is a saw that, you know, anyway, it's a long saw, and you could see him slice the meat and he was covered with blood. Very disgusting. So what actually convinced me to become a vegetarian before I joined the Hare Krishna movement is that somehow or other I didn't realize that meat came from animals. I mean, I knew it theoretically, but not practically or realization. So what happened is that once upon a time, I went into my mother's kitchen and I asked her, what's for dinner? And she said, my dear son, tongue is for dinner. And I thought tongue was just the name of some brand like Kraft or different brands that you have here in Europe. And I thought, well, let me see what it is. And I looked on the table and there was an actual tongue of a cow. It was about this big. This big. I was shocked. And then I ran into the bathroom to look at my own tongue. You know, just to see the comparison. Looked in the mirror, stuck my tongue out. I said, oh my God, it looks the same. And I ran back in the kitchen. I said, that's a real tongue, Mother. And she said, of course. I would never make anything artificial, canned, preserved, frozen for you, you know, because I love you so much. I want to give you everything fresh, a fresh tongue. And I said, that's it. And there ensued at that particular point a lot of conflicts in my family between my mother and myself. Anyway, I don't need to get into the details. But somehow or other, you know, it took me a little while because I was brought up in a city environment, as many of you have been. And I didn't really, let's say, have the realization where meat comes from. So let's talk about the situation. That's my own particular situation. Let's talk about the situation of Lord Buddha, who was mentioned here in this purport. Lord Buddha, of course, is an incarnation of Krishna. And it was predicted when he was born that he would be very compassionate and take sannyas. So naturally, his parents didn't want him to take sannyas because parents naturally want to enjoy the child, not only the childhood. It's like we have children here, right? It's very enjoyable. Just like I was speaking to one of the grasses the other day, and he's saying, that I want to spend more time with my son. It's so enjoyable. Anyway, from a sannyasi's perspective, it's hard to understand. However, from the parent's perspective, it's very enjoyable. Not only the child, but when the child grows up, then the child gets married, you enjoy the marriage. When the marriage happens, then you enjoy the grandchildren, and then you enjoy the great-grandchildren, and you never get out. Never get out of the situation. Anyway, so Lord Buddha's parents, they were thinking, you know, we don't want him to take sannyas, renounce everything. So let's keep him in a situation where he's not exposed to the realities of life. Let's keep him in a situation so he doesn't see birth, death, disease, and old age. And so they kept him within the palace. And they got him married to a very beautiful girl too. So he was thinking, you know, everybody is beautiful. Like that song goes, everything is beautiful in its own way. Anyway, so everyone was beautiful, and if any sick man was there, it wasn't allowed into the palace. But one day Lord Buddha decided that he wanted to go out and see the world. So he took his charioteer and he went out past the palace gates and he starts running into different examples of birth, death, disease, not at least death, disease, and old age. I don't think he actually saw someone being born, but at least death, disease, and old age. He saw an old person and he said to his charioteer, "What is that?" And the charioteer said, "That's an old person." And he said, "Where does that come from?" And the charioteer says, "Everyone gets old." And then Lord Buddha said, "Me too." And the charioteer said, "Yes, you too." And then he saw a sick person like that. And then he saw a funeral procession. And the same question and answer went on back and forth like that. And Lord Buddha became shocked. And as a result, he left his kingdom, left his beautiful wife, left everything, and began to meditate. Of course, I'm not going to go into the whole process of his meditation, but first he was meditating, undergoing strict austerities. And after a while, he figured that wasn't the right way. And so then he came out with a middle path. Anyway, so we're not going to talk about Buddhism today. But Buddha actually had some interesting realizations, like the Four Noble Truths. What are the Four Noble Truths he has? Material existence is suffering. Suffering is caused by attachment. And we agree with these things, right? Third one is give up the attachment. Then you get rid of the suffering. And then the fourth one was the Eightfold Path, which he gave with right living, etc. like that, is the method for giving up the attachment. Of course, we would disagree to a certain extent with the last one, because the method of giving up the attachment is to become attached to something superior, not simply to give it up. I mean, many of us have tried to give up attachment. Many times I've been preaching to devotees to become detached, and it's never worked. I just, you know, devotee is suffering. I said, just become detached. You're not the body. You try that. Go to the hospital where someone is suffering, a devotee, and they're suffering pain. You say, "You're not the body, Prabhu. Be detached." I think the devotee will simply become angry at you. You know, why don't you be compassionate with me? So basically, with the way we get detachment is being attached to Krishna's holy name, attached to the pastimes of Krishna, attached to the Bhagavatam, attached to the various aspects of devotional service. Anyway, so that was Buddha. So Buddha showed the utmost compassion. And that compassion means to see all other living entities as oneself, or even more important than oneself, as Vasudeva Dutt exhibited. Paradukha Dukhi, consider others' happiness and others' distress more important than your own happiness and distress. This is very, very interesting. And of course, this refers to all living entities. And there's many examples of this, not only Buddha, and not only Vasudeva Dutt, many examples of this in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and also in the Bhagavatam. I mean, let's take one example, King Rantidev. I think you've all heard of King Rantidev. No? Okay. So King Rantidev was very interesting. He never ate meat, first of all. Let's understand that. And then he would undergo different austerities in order to purify himself. In other words, one time he fasted for 48 days. Now, let me be very clear about this. Simply by fasting, you don't purify yourself. You have to do other things, like chanting Hare Krishna. Like I had one devotee who would stay up all night fasting on Ekadasi, and in order to do that, because he was in the mode of passion, he would be watching the stock market all night long. You understand, stock market? Just to stay awake. So it's not simply by staying awake on Ekadasi without being Krishna conscious that you're going to make spiritual advance. But the whole benefit of Ekadasi is to increase the hearing and chanting. Not simply to decrease the bodily necessities. The reason for decreasing the bodily necessities is that you'll have more time for hearing and chanting, not less time for hearing and chanting. So everything has to be understood in the right context. For example, if one fasts completely on Ekadasi and avoids water on Ekadasi, but he becomes so spaced out and weak that he's not able to focus on the holy name or focus on his reading, which happens to me sometimes. You know, if I try to fast completely, then the pages in the book become blurred and I can't read. So what is the use of that? So then you take a little fruit, a little simple things like that on Ekadasi. So anyway, King Rantidev, he was fasting for 48 days. That's a long time, isn't it? No food, no water. And so you would think after that period of time, you'd be really enthusiastic to eat. So they were preparing very nice food for King Rantidev with ghee, because as Charvaka Muni says, beg, borrow, or steal, get yourself some ghee if you want to have material enjoyment. Did you know that? When I joined the movement, everything was cooked in ghee. That's one of the reasons I joined the Hare Krishna movement. Philosophy was secondary. I remember the pakoras cooked in ghee. In the early days, everything was cooked in ghee, isn't it? It was delicious. I mean, I don't eat like that anymore. Anyway, so he had food prepared. Everything was in ghee. Actually, this is in the heavenly planets. They don't eat anything that is not cooked in ghee. There's no oil in the heavenly planets. Certainly no canola oil, which is Canada oil, which is a GMO oil. But anyway, so they presented him with this plate. So he was getting ready to eat, he and his family. And then a Brahmin came. And the Brahmin said, I'm hungry. So he said, all right, we'll share some of the food with you. The Brahmin ate. The Brahmin was satisfied. Then he was thinking, all right, now it's time to take prasadam. Then a Shudra came. And all right, you can have some of the food too. So then he was ready to eat whatever was left. And then a guest came with dogs. Can you imagine? You know, just sometimes we say the word dog in a very pejorative or negative way. Isn't it? He's just a dog. You ever hear someone talk like that? A dog. Dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Vavid vara, hosu karai, samstuta, purusha, purushu, yat karna pado, peta, jatunama, kadashwe, kasha. Those are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Never glorify the Lord. Anyway, so a dog came with his master, and so he just fed him the rest of the prasada. So this King Rantidev, because he was feeling so much compassion for the hunger of these animals and the human beings. Finally, he was getting ready to say, all right, let me take some water at least. You know, after 48 days, he was a little thirsty. And so a chandala came, and the chandala asked for something, and he gave the chandala the water. I mean, can you imagine the extent of that compassion? So then King Rantidev prayed. He said, basically by helping or feeding these living entities or giving these living entities water, I myself have conquered over hunger, thirst, and all the bodily urges, which is interesting. It's an interesting statement that by being compassionate to others and sacrificing for others, we can conquer over the urges, the lust, anger, greed, and all the anarthas. That's a very interesting statement, because as we're talking about Lord Buddha, that the desire is actually the cause of pain in this material world. So Rantidev is actually giving us a method of conquering over desire, which is interesting. Instead of the negation of the desire, And in addition to hearing Krishna's pastimes, feeling compassionate for others. Now remember, let's take a Sunday feast, an ISKCON Sunday feast, for example, that unfortunately, I'm not saying in this temple because I've never observed, haven't observed for a long time a Sunday feast, but at most temples, when it comes time for the Sunday feast, who is first in line? Does anyone know? The devotees. And the guests, I mean, I've seen this in our temple in Fiji, for example, New Goloka in the United States, isn't it? The devotees are first. And the guests have to wait. Now, that's not how I was trained in Krishna consciousness. I was trained, you feed the guests first, and if there's anything left over, you can eat. Because you're eating prasadam the other 6.5 days a year. A week, sorry. But you're just thinking that enjoyment comes from glubjamans. Right? Glubjamans, sweet rice, halva. And you're like salivating like the Pavlovian. You know who Pavlov is? No one knows who Pavlov is. All right, I'll explain who Pavlov is. He's a famous psychiatrist. He tested dogs that every time he rang a bell, he would feed them. And so, after a while, he didn't feed them anymore, he just rang the bell. That's torture. And then the dog still salivated. In other words, that like that. Lust. So therefore, let's say in Fiji, for example, which is part of my GBC zone. It's interesting to have a GBC zone that goes all the way from Europe to Fiji, but that's called insanity. So in Fiji, I told the devotees, they're very angry with me. I said, you cannot eat until the guests have prasadam. And not only that, you have to serve the guests. And they said, what? Us serve? We're the devotees. And they're the karmis. So, you know, nice consciousness. So then, in order to enforce that, I had to just stand there and serve the guests myself. And then I had to teach the devotees how to serve the guests. Because they were just serving, just saying, oh, I hope these guests leave as soon as possible. With a consciousness, you know, just like, here's your prasadam. Don't take too much. So, I had to show the devotees how to serve by going around to each guest and smiling at the guest and thanking the guest for giving me the opportunity to serve. You understand? I was thinking, yeah, you know, it's a change in consciousness. Just like Randy Dave, I'm not saying I'm like Randy Dave, I couldn't fast for 48 days. I can't fast for 48 minutes, what to speak of 48 days. But, you know, somehow or other I'll find somebody to eat. But the consciousness, you know, the example of Randy Dave is there, that we should be happy to serve other people. Not only we're thinking, you know, this is my duty, I have to do it, this GBC or temple president is watching over me, what misery. We should be happy. So I changed the culture there. And the guests were so happy that more guests started coming to the temple and giving bigger donations to the temple, which pleased the temple president very much. And more people became devotees. So that's how we should deal with guests. In fact, it says if a guest comes to your house, I mean, even before a guest comes to your house, let's say if you're a grahastha, you're supposed to cry out 4 times, you know. If anyone's 3 or 4 times, whatever. If anyone's hungry, please let them come eat. Loudly, not, if anyone's hungry, please let them come eat. You know, loudly, and then be ready to feed everybody. And then when everyone's fed, like Prabhupada said, his father always had so many people over for prasadam. I mean, that's how we'll spread Krishna consciousness. Not simply the people come to the temple, but people come to the individual grahastha's homes, you invite them in, there should be sharing of prasadam practically every weekend, the grasses should be inviting people over for prasadam, exchanging, you know, dadati pratigranati, guyam akyati prichati, bhunte bhojyate chaiva, giving gifts, exchanging gifts, accepting gifts, revealing your mind, talking confidentially, and then giving prasadam and accepting prasadam. These are the methods Prabhupada said that our Krishna consciousness movement expands on. The six loving exchanges. Because people are looking for love, and of course we can love Krishna, but we love the devotees and exchange love with the devotees. And then so many people join our Krishna conscious movement if we have these loving exchanges. So anyway, so this is how we should approach the Sunday feast. I don't know if they do that here, but it's, nobody's talked to me. It's not an advertisement that Ananda told me to talk about. But it's just something that, you know, inspires me from reading this verse in purport. So that's compassion. Because they need prasadam. Prasadam is going to say, if someone takes one little bit of prasadam, guess what? They'll become a devotee. Like Prabhupada, there's that famous talk when Prabhupada was talking to the devotees about simply wonderfuls. He said, if you give this person, a person is simply wonderful, who'll come to the temple and he'll become a devotee and he'll become simply wonderful, whatever. And then, of course, the devotee said to Prabhupada at that time, you are simply wonderful, Prabhupada. Simply wonderful is one of the sweets we used to have in the Krishna conscious movement. It's like a sugar, milk, butter type of thing. And so we should be thinking on how to help people, bring people to Krishna consciousness. Not simply be satisfied. Like we're supposed to be Bhajanandis. I mean Goshanandis, sorry. Bhajanandi is someone who's just simply satisfied trying to develop his higher stages of bhakti. I mean, you find this right now, it's making its way to a certain extent in the movement. You know, people just want to sit down and think of the Ashtakaliya Leela. And there's nothing wrong with the Ashtakaliya Leela, obviously. The Eightfold Pastimes of the Lord. But basically, Prabhupada's mood was, by preaching Krishna consciousness, what is it, deserve, then desire, then you'll please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and be able to come to the highest stages or higher stages of bhakti. It will be revealed to you. You don't have to go through the process of siddha pranali or any of these things that we don't do in the Krishna consciousness movement. But sometimes people outside of the movement try to lure people away from the Krishna consciousness movement by offering something cheap. Because when you're offered something cheap, you only get what you pay for. It's like one devotee one time was going to Italy, southern Italy. And you all know that there's a lot of people who cheat there, right? No, maybe you don't know that. Anyway, so the car stopped at a rest stop. And some man came up to him with this big, what we call a boombox. You know what a boombox is? No. Anyway, a CD player with beautiful speakers on it and everything like that. And he said, look, I have this. I want you to buy this. I have to get rid of it. My wife needs some whatever she needs. And I'll sell it to you at a very cheap price. You know, 25, 50 euros. You can have it. The thing's worth like 300, 400 euros. It's all right. So he takes it. He doesn't take it, but he said, the man who's selling it to him then puts it in the box. And then gives him the box. And the devotee is thinking, this is ecstatic. I got this wonderful device for serving Krishna. And then a little way down the road, he opens up the box and there's what, some stones or weights or something else in it. And he discovers he's been cheated. You get what you pay for. Either materially or spiritually. You get what you pay for. So our payment for pure devotional service is to share Krishna consciousness with others, to be compassionate. If one does not see Krishna in every living entity or be compassionate to other living entities, then his worship is like offering oblations to ashes. In other words, if we're just seeing Krishna, that's like a third class devotee. Just seeing Krishna or seeing our relationship with Krishna without understanding Krishna's omnipresence in everyone's heart, then Does Krishna actually accept? Maybe to a certain extent, but we don't make much spiritual advancement. Okay, one or two more examples of compassion, because I was preaching a lot to all of you. Another example of compassion for other living entities is another king in the Vedic tradition. His name is Shivi. You've all heard of Maharaj Shivi? Maharaj Shivi was also not eating meat. So Maharaj Shivi, one time was sitting on his throne, and then all of a sudden, a small bird, like a pigeon, I think you all know what a pigeon is. Pigeon is usually not considered a high-class bird. Like Prabhupada said, that the pigeons, they pass stool on all the statues in town. You know, Prabhupada was talking about one politician in India, I forget who it was, maybe Nehru or someone like that, how the pigeons come and they pass stool. Once a year, the municipal sweeper sweeps off the pigeon stool off of the statue. So this pigeon came to Maharaj Shivi and said, "This hawk is chasing me." And Maharaj Shivi said, "I'll protect you." So he said to the hawk, or the eagle, Prabhupada sometimes translates that as eagle, sometimes it's translated as hawk. And he says, "Please leave the pigeon alone. What type of prasadam do you want?" And the eagle says, I just want some meat, and what I'll be satisfied with is either the meat of this pigeon, or you can offer your own flesh. So Maharaj Shivi started, and the idea was he was supposed to offer his own flesh up to the weight of the pigeon. So they made a little scale there. And so Maharaj Shivi started to peel off his own flesh. And that's pretty interesting. And put it on the scale. It wasn't enough. Finally, Maharaj Shivi sits on the scale and tries to offer him his whole self, his whole body, that is, to the hawk or to the eagle. And then the hawk and the eagle reveal who they actually are, which is interesting. The pigeon. The pigeon is Agni Dev, and the hawk is Indra. And they bless him in this way. It was a test. Sometimes devotees are tested like that. And they, of course, blessed him in so many different ways. So we see there that Maharaj Shivi was compassionate to animals, just like what we would call dumb animals, and ready to sacrifice his life to help dumb animals. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, we find that Lord Chaitanya is giving compassion to a dog, Jivananda Singh, getting very upset when the dog wasn't fed properly. So there's so many examples of this Vaishnava compassion. So these are examples for us to follow, to learn the mood of a Vaishnava, Vanchakalpataruvyascha, Kripa Sindhuvyavacha, Patitadam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah, and be very enthusiastic to spread Krishna consciousness to others. Of course, we cannot or should not neglect our own personal sadhana, because without having good sadhana, we won't have the potency to give Krishna consciousness to others. So good sadhana, a balanced program, good reading, good studying, and then going out to help others. And this will actually satisfy Srila Prabhupada and bring us to the higher platform of Krishna consciousness. So any questions or comments about any of these points? Yeah, any questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? No?
Yes.
Yeah.
About Sunday feast.
Yeah.
In the early days, you mentioned that guests, everything was cooking ghee and people are fed by giving them nice prasadam. Example, I have no money. Mm-hmm. And they make the guests to pay for the Sunday feast. Is that compassion or Krishna?
I don't want to be political. Is that done here?
Some places do it.
Some places.
Some temples.
Not here.
Some temples, guests pay for Sunday feast.
Yeah, but I don't want to point out specific temples. I mean, I mean, that's a tricky question. I would say, according to time, place, and circumstance, you have to see what's practical. Sometimes people appreciate more if they pay a little bit. I mean, like Prabhupada sometimes would say, as far as a program is concerned, you should charge admission so that people will appreciate more. So I'm not saying that we should charge for our preaching, or I should give you a bill for Bhagavatam class. There's an interesting story about Tamal Krishnamars, though, that once he was at a temple, and the temple president wanted to charge him for his, you know, the bus being there. And then he said, you know, charge him for, because he had a bus, traveling Sankirtan party. So then Tamal Krishnamar presented him with a bill for class. He said, I gave so many Bhagavatam classes, you know, $100 a class or whatever it was. And so the temple president became shocked and said, okay, I'm not going to charge you. However, I mean, we have to see what's practical. I mean, with a restaurant, we charge for prasadam. I mean, it just depends on time, place, and circumstance. The main thing is the compassionate attitude. Just like we have this food for life program, which some devotees may not appreciate for one reason or another, but if it is actually distributing prasadam, that's another point. Sometimes we have so-called food for life programs where they're not giving prasadam. They just hire non-devotees to, you know, cook, non-devotees to offer, of course they don't offer, but non-devotees to do everything, and then it's not prasadam, they say it's food for life. That's like food for death. You know, we're giving out bhoga, and actually Krishna says he who eats without first offering, he's verily eating sin. So we don't want to be involved in that. Like, we're not simply propagating vegetarianism. Like Prabhupada would sometimes say, many animals are vegetarians. We're propagating Krishnarianism or something like that, or Krishna Prasad, because that's what will help people. So if we can distribute food for life, prasadam to many people, whether there's a disaster or there's not a disaster, like right now you have a disaster going on in Bosnia, a disaster going on in Serbia, and the devotees are going out distributing thousands of plates a day of prasadam. That's very nice, because people will appreciate us, we'll get good publicity for the movement, and people get purified by eating prasadam. So in that case, you don't go charge people. But if that depends, you know, time, place, and circumstance. I can't criticize a particular temple for charging. There may be a reason for doing that. Yeah.
There's a very strong exchange between Srila Prabhupada and one man who said to Prabhupada in Vrindavan, why do we have to pay for the Mahaprasadam? Why is there a Mahaprasadam stand and we have to buy prasadam? Prabhupada said, that's because you're not donating.
Yeah, that's a good thing. The man said, why do we have to pay? And Prabhupada said, because you're not donating. You know, if people have money, they should pay. And if people are not generous, then you may have to have some charge for Mahaprasadam or something like that. I mean, anyway, time, place, and circumstance. I don't want to get into any political criticism of charging for the Sunday feast. It may be necessary for, although sometimes the devotees have started doing it in certain places and they've had to stop because it was driving away the congregation. And sometimes if you charge for the Sunday feast in certain places, people will give less donations. So anyway, because if people give a donation, they're also engaged. That's also compassion to accept it. Donation from someone. Because if someone gives something to Krishna, they make spiritual advancement. So it's not uncompassionate to ask for money. So any other questions? Non-political questions? Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Any of the ladies? No, everyone's really quiet today. Oh yeah.
I would just like to ask, how does one become compassionate? What kind of practice does one take on?
Well, you've heard of chanting? You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Chanting the holy name of the Lord. Basically, it softens the heart, chanting without offense or attempting to get rid of the offenses. And associating with those who are compassionate. And basically, putting yourself in other people's position, walking in other people's shoes, so to speak. Thinking, if I was that person, if I was that cow, if I was that non-devotee, I don't want to use the word karmi, because the word karmi has been used improperly in the Krishna conscious movement. Because the word karmi basically means one who is engaged in karmakandya activities for material upliftment to go to the heavenly planets. But if I was in that person's shoes or from that person's perspective, how would I feel? I mean, that's a good way to develop compassion. To see others at least as the same as oneself, if not better, more important than oneself. But that comes from chanting, and also you have to become vegetarian. Without becoming a vegetarian, you're not going to be compassionate. You're not going to appreciate Krishna's pastimes. You're not going to understand the philosophy. In the 10th canto, first chapter, text 4, there's an interesting verse. Nivritta tar shari upagivana vavoshido shotra mano viramat kautama shloka gunanavada vina pashugnat. That if one is killing animals, one will not be attracted to Krishna's pastimes, or as Prabhupada would say, understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So compassion begins at least with becoming vegetarian. And many people are appreciating that nowadays. Not only devotees, many people are becoming vegetarians. So devotional service is the next step after vegetarianism. So any other questions? Yes.
My mom is growing animals. She lives in a village. And I try to argue with her, to convince her to stop doing that, to become vegetarian maybe, but I fail. So I feel guilty. So how should I stop feeling guilty?
How should you stop feeling guilty? That's an interesting question. How to stop feeling guilty. Because you tried your best. We're not responsible for other people's choices. We only have the responsibility to explain things to people. But once we explain things, or we attempt to purify them by giving them prasadam, I mean, that's one method you can utilize. At the same time, whatever she's doing, give them some prasadam so she can come to that realization. And you're not responsible for anyone else. I mean, if we have this idea that we're responsible for other people's choices, that's sort of a codependency. We're not. Everyone has their own choice. I mean, I realized that very early in my endeavor to be a spiritual master, that first of all, I was thinking, you know, all my disciples would become pure devotees in 30 days or less. And then when that didn't happen, and some of them actually went the other direction, I felt, you know, what am I doing wrong? Is it me that's lacking? Maybe I'm doing something wrong. I mean, obviously we should introspect like that. But then I understood everyone has their choices in life. And my choice is to always be compassionate, but not take responsibility for someone else's bad choices. To always pray for someone. And prayer is a very powerful thing. You can pray for your mother that you'll have that realization. Pray for her, give her prasadam, and then one day she'll change. But you're not responsible. Whatever anyone else does or chooses to do, you have no responsibility in that, as long as you've tried your best to tell them what you know. It's important. Otherwise, we'll be overcome by guilt. Not only for our parents, for our disciples, for children, for everything. It's just like, then the whole world, I'm responsible for everybody. You're not. You're responsible for one person. Yourself. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Questions, comments? No questions or comments. All right. Guess everyone's hungry this morning. They've been fasting for 48 days, like King Ranti Dave. Okay. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.